Now, five high-profile ballot questions to watch from around the country. You've talked about the questions in New York and New Jersey, and we'll talk more about those later in the program this morning. But now we're heading west for five important questions from three different states that are really, really interesting. Washington could become the first state to require GMO labeling, genetically modified organism food, labeling. Colorado voters will be asked two tax questions, one on how legal recreational marijuana, which they already voted for, would be taxed, and one on how much of state tax revenue would go to education. Could be 43% by act of the voters. And in the very dry state of Texas, voters will decide how to pay for water projects to get through this very long drought. And that, of course, is a long-term issue in the dry Southwest anyway. Jake Grovem, staff writer from Pew's Stateline News Service, joins us now. Hi, Jake. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And let's start in Washington State with that GMO labeling question. What foods would this apply to?
Well, this is any food that would be, determined to have genetically modified ingredients within it. Often these things, the definition plays out after the fact, but generally speaking, it would be those foods that have corn or other ingredients that, were genetically modified at some point.
Is there a top-line argument on each side that people in Washington State are hearing over and over and over again?
Well, I think what you're hearing is similar to what we saw in California when this issue was up last year, is that, there's a sense that for supporters that people have the right to know if these things are in their food. And the others, the opponents say, this would be an onerous requirement, especially for national producers of food. Every state doesn't tend to have its own food producers, and so there's no national standard which would make this difficult, perhaps.
And I read that this has been a very expensive campaign on GMO food labeling, and that, unsurprisingly perhaps, the lion's share of the money has been spent by the food industry.
Yes, the total fundraising topped $40 million, which makes it the most expensive ballot question campaign in the state history. And
$40 million on a ballot question?
That's correct.
And go ahead.
About $33 million of that has been against the question.
So the food industry trying to protect itself. And yet, despite that lopsided campaign spending, it looks to me like the polls are close, yeah?
Yes, the polling has been close, varied a bit depending on, the poll. And turnout is also something that people think will determine the outcome. Seattle has a mayoral election that might drive more liberal voters to the polls. There's less going on in the more conservative eastern part of the state. Turnout could really determine things here.
Similar measure did not pass in California last year, so now Washington is the groundbreaker, the bellwether from what might change food labeling practices nationwide if it gets through. So there's so much focus on that today. Let's move to Colorado. There are two tax questions there. Let's start with the question about recreational marijuana taxation. What's the plan?
Well, this would impose about a 25% total tax on top of the 2.9% general sales tax in the state. Basically, it would a 15% tax on wholesale retail marijuana, and then the rest would come on a sales tax from the person buying it.
And what's the argument for a yes vote or a no vote? Because last year, Coloradans already approved the idea of legal recreational marijuana, right?
Right, and part of the idea was that it would be taxed to fund part of this tax would go toward education spending. The other parts would go toward law enforcement, programs related to the retail marijuana market, and also local governments in areas in which the marijuana is sold.
Any of that earmarked for addiction treatment, problem user treatment?
There are programs like that are set to be involved in the kind of law enforcement approach and drug treatment policy that would come out of the revenue, yes.
And for people listening saying, pot isn't addictive, we've had that conversation on the show a number of times, and it's not in the same way as heroin, say, but there are certainly problem users and places that consider legalizing recreational marijuana tend to set aside money to help them. So the second tax question in Colorado would create a progressive two-tiered system and get rid of Colorado's flat income tax, same percentage for everybody, that they've had since the 1980s. And this one seems more complicated, especially because it also involves education spending. What are the details?
Well, right. Right now, the state has a 4.6% flat income tax. This would change that for anyone making less than $75,000 a year. It would be 5%. Above that level, it would be 5.9%. And, you know, this is expected to bring in quite a bit of revenue, about $1 billion, according to state estimates. And you're right, a lot of it, beyond just the raw revenue, the state would be required to spend about 43% of its tax revenue on education going forward, which would be a sizable increase.
Is that an unusually large chunk, 43% of state revenue to education? Is that much higher than in other states, do you know?
Well, you know, of all states, it tends to be about, on average, about a fifth of budget spending, depending how you kind of slice and dice the numbers. But compared to Colorado's own history, in the last fiscal year of the state's general fund, about 29% of that fund went to education. So in Colorado specifically, it would be a good increase.
So if both of these pass, this would mean the largest tax hike in the state's history, especially because the two-tier tax system, ending the flat tax system, would mean a tax hike on the wealthier Coloradans. What happened to libertarian Colorado?
Well, they're definitely out there fighting against both of these, you know, and the kind of conservative activists, emboldened somewhat by the gun recall votes earlier this fall, have been out there. You know, Colorado has a history of kind of anti-tax sentiment. That's why these are up for a vote in the first place. And so they're definitely trying to make their case heard.
All right. Let's do the two Texas ones real quick before we run out of time. One is about using a rainy day fund, to deal with the state's drought. What are the details of Proposition 6 regarding this very unfunny dry spell?
Right. Well, this would tap the rainy day fund for about $2 billion toward the state's general kind of water management plan. And what this would do would then, it would give the state water officials, water board, the right to use these funds to fund other projects in line with kind of helping the state manage its water problems.
And maybe the most interesting thing about this campaign is the strange bedfellows and the polls. The Republican legislators and the state's chapter of the Sierra Club are both supporting it, and yet it's only polling at about 50%.
That's right. And, you know, there are the opponents are also, you know, some strange bedfellows as well. There are some fiscal conservatives that are just opposed to tapping a rainy day fund at all. And some even, I guess, more ardent environmentalists beyond the Sierra Club that are opposed to it just because they don't appreciate or support the state's general water management plan.
And the continued aggressive use of water by states in a dry part of the country. Right, those more aggressive environmentalists would want people to change their behavior more than change infrastructure.
That's right, and this would actually give that Texas Water Development Board is appointed by the governor in Texas, which you know opponents of the Perry administration or you know anyone like that wouldn't be supportive of his appointees having direct say over this fund.
And the last one, also a housing, also a question in Texas, is about housing. This would legalize reverse mortgages, which most other states already allow. We hear commercials for them all the time in the New York area, targeted at elderly homeowners who are running out of money and can get income by having a reverse mortgage where, in effect, the bank gradually buys back their house, but they pay interest on it and all that stuff. So you have to be careful if you're doing a reverse mortgage. But this would be the first legalization of it in Texas. Is it controversial?
It's somewhat controversial. It's actually more, I think, kind of symbolic of the state's, you know, strange history with housing policy compared to other states, and it's one of the that history is one of the reasons that some say it's fared better in the housing downturn. You know, for years, home equity loans, for example, you know, weren't allowed under state law, and so this is just, you know, more along the lines of moving Texas toward the direction of housing policy that other states have adopted.
And we also know that while there are these ballot questions in other states, the rest of the country is watching New York and New Jersey's ballot questions on casino gambling, legalization in New York State, and an increase in the minimum wage tied to inflation in New Jersey. Is that one a big deal? I think that's the holy grail for minimum wage supporters, to tie it, in this case through the state's constitution, to the consumer price index, so they don't have to have a big political fight, which they tend to lose on the pro-minimum wage side every single time, you know, inflation goes up. Does any other state have this, as far as you know?
There are actually 10 other states that have a similar policy, and you're right. You know, having those increases baked in, you know, for the future definitely alleviate, you know, any of the fights that come up anytime you talk about raising the minimum wage.
Well, thanks for this quick tour around the country and some of the ballot questions. Jake Grovem, staff writer from Pew's Stateline News Service. Jake, good job. Thanks a lot. Happy Election Day.
Thank you for having me.